This Is Your Life, episode number 9. This is your life. Are you who you wanna be? Hello and welcome to another episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt, and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional living and leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. Today, we're going to be talking about the whole work-life balance thing and whether or not it's even possible. In fact, one of the things I want to challenge is that whole metaphor of balance. I'm not sure that's really the best metaphor, and I'm going to propose another one as we get into the program. But first, I've got a few announcements. I'm going to be speaking at the SCORE conference in Rome, Georgia, on April the 29th through May the 3rd. Actually, I'm speaking on the last day. It's sold out. So why am I telling you this? Because the next SCORE conference is in Vail, Colorado, October 17th through 20th. Now listen, if you are a public speaker or if you aspire to be a public speaker, you have got to go to the SCORE conference, and that's SCORE with two R's because it's an acronym that's used in the SCORE conference to explain how to speak with more impact. And I went a little over a year ago, and I was so blown away by it that I actually became a business partner with Ken Davis, who's my dear friend and who's the founder of the SCORE Conference. He's been doing it for a couple of decades, but a phenomenal experience, and you can find more information at SCORE Conference, again with two R's, scoreconference.com. There's a link in the show notes. I'll also be speaking at the Chick-fil-A LeaderCast on May the 4th in Atlanta. Actually, technically, I'm not speaking, but I'm doing all the backstage interviews, the backstage program with the speakers as they come off the stage. And I'm looking forward to interviewing people like Tim Tebow, Marcus Buckingham, John Maxwell, Soledad O'Brien, Patrick Lencioni, Andy Stanley, a whole bunch more. But the event's going to be live in Atlanta. And if you can't come to the event in Atlanta, and I'd love to see you do that, but if you can't do that, the event's going to be simulcast to 750 to 800 different locations around the world. About 150,000 people watching, and you can find more information at chickfilaleadercast.com. Again, a link in the show notes. Then I'll be speaking May 9th through 11th at Catalyst Dallas. I just returned from Catalyst Irvine, California, where I spoke last week. The theme is Be Present this year at all the Catalyst conferences, and it's a great theme. In fact, it's going to tie in nicely to our topic for today on work-life balance. But the speakers for Catalyst Dallas will be Andy Stanley, John Maxwell, Matt Chandler, Mark Batterston, Bob Goff, John Acuff, Perry Noble, Pete Wilson, a whole bunch more. That's just a sampling. But I'll be leading a lab on Wednesday, May the 9th, on the topic of my new book, Platform, Get Noticed in a Noisy World. And this is what I spoke on in Irvine last week. And I think it really went over pretty well. It's really an important topic to me and something that I care deeply about. And you'll be hearing more from me on that topic as the weeks and months roll out with the book coming out on May the 22nd. But anyway, more information on Catalyst Dallas at, surprise, catalystdallas.com. Then I'll be speaking at the Blog World and New Media Expo in New York City on June the 5th through the 7th. I'll be speaking at one of the super sessions on Thursday morning, June the 7th at 9 a.m. I'm not fully convinced what I'm going to speak on there, but it's going to be something around platform. And I think something around what I'm learning as a new podcaster, because I am having to take my own medicine and kind of relearn from the ground up what it means to build a platform. Because when it comes to podcasting, it's all brand new to me. And it's, if you listen to several of these episodes, you know, I'm still experimenting. I'm still trying to figure this out. It's still challenging, but also rewarding enough to keep me in the game. But if you want to go to Blog World, and it's been a dream of mine to go, and this will be my first year, but you can register before May 15th and get a $100 discount on the 3-day bloggers and podcaster pass by going to michaelhyatt.com/blogworld. Okay, so into the main content. I want to talk about work-life balance, as I said, and I've got some great questions from listeners. I had about 20 questions in all, but I pared it down to about 5. But I want to give you a little bit of content on the front end of this, because I had several people after I announced a format change last week that wrote in to say, or called in and left a voicemail and said, you know, please don't totally change your program up. We love the way you structure it. You know, we love the fact that we can get a lot of information in a short amount of time. So please don't completely change your format. So I think this is kind of a hybrid, And it's my intention going forward. We'll see how it's received. But I want to give you some content on the front end. And then I want to open it up to questions, because I want to answer your questions. I want to make sure that I've got my finger on the pulse of my listeners, and I'm making this as highly relevant to you as I possibly can. So let me just start with this by way of introduction. If you're working more than about 55 hours a week, I think you're working too much. I mean, that's kind of the standard I hold myself to. And you're most likely out of alignment with your priorities. And in fact, that's really what I want to suggest as a different metaphor than work-life balance, is this idea of priority management. Really what work-life balance is, I think, as you think through it, it's not about balance. I mean, think about balance. It means you're applying equal weight to two or more competing activities. And that's just not reality. That's not how most of us work. And it also suggests that you can get to this point where you have this perfect, you know, sort of, zen-like moment or something, where everything's in perfect alignment, everything's in perfect balance, and you can just, you know, move forward from there with everything under control. And that certainly hasn't been my experience. But I think it's really about priority management. It's something you have to constantly work at. And so 55 hours a week is kind of a benchmark or a guideline that I use for myself. You may be able to work more than that for a season, but ultimately, I don't think it's sustainable. If you continue to work this much or more, something's eventually going to break. Let me give you an example. When I first began in my publishing career, man, I was determined to succeed. I'd gotten into publishing at a little company called Word Publishing in Waco, Texas, when I was a senior at Baylor University. And then I left that post and went into the ministry for a while, and decided that that really wasn't for me either, that I really wanted to get back into publishing. So I got offered a job as the marketing director of Word Books. And man, I was elated. It was like the dream job to be a marketing director. Only one small problem. I didn't have any experience. And all of a sudden, I found myself responsible for all the advertising, merchandising, in-store promotion, public relations. I had a staff reporting to me, and I'd managed to sell myself into this job, but I didn't have any experience. So really, a lot of what was driving me in those early days was fear. Because I didn't have any experience, I was just scared to death I would be found out. You know, that they would come along and say, look, you know, the gig's up. We realize you don't have any experience. You don't have a clue what you're doing. And so we're going to escort you out of the office. So yeah, it was never consciously expressed, but I'm telling you that sort of in my psyche, deep down somewhere in my subconscious, there was this fear that was driving me. On the positive side, I also had this drive to achieve, and I've battled with this my entire life. In fact, I think it's one of my strengths, at least according to StrengthsFinder, it's my top strength as achiever. But I love climbing the corporate ladder. I love succeeding. I love going from one level to the next. I'm the kind of guy that's constantly checking metrics to make sure that I'm beating the previous month's metrics, no matter what they are, whether it's sales, when I was in sales, or whether it's in ad impressions, or now with my blog, I'm constantly looking at the metrics. But in those early years, I would arrive at the office, and I'm not making this up, at 5 a.m., and I would not leave until 6 p.m. And I even felt a little guilty for leaving at 6 p.m. But I'd usually be at my desk during lunch. So that ended up being about 13 hours a day. And I would almost always go into the office on Saturday too. So I was routinely working 70 hours a week. Now, my dear wife, Gail, was patient. But at the time, we had two small children at home. We would eventually have five. In fact, we had five under the age of 10 at one point. But at this point I'm talking about, we had two children at home, and she really needed relief. Andy Stanley gives this great metaphor of when we tell people to just kind of wait, that we've got a business to do, we've got work to do, and we'll be home in a bit. It's like asking people to hold a rock. You know, they're happy to do it initially, but eventually it becomes a burden. And then they begin to resent it. So early on, Gail was patient, but you know, our relationship was just not what it should be. And we found ourselves becoming increasingly short with one another. And I kind of arrogantly said to her, you know, I think this is really your problem. And in fact, I mean, I can't believe I said this. I said, I think you need to see a counselor and you get it worked out. And so I sent her off to a counselor and I kept working 70 hours a week. Well, I don't know how long this went on. It was several weeks and she came back to me and she said, Mike, Dr. Pannebecker, who was our psychologist, her psychologist, would like to see you at my next appointment. I was a little bit indignant. I said, well, first of all, I don't have time. You know the hours I'm putting in and I need to do this to succeed. And it's really about us. You know, that's what every workaholic says, you know, he's doing it for somebody else. And so I said, I don't really have time. And she said, well, he's really insistent and he doesn't think that we can resolve this issue unless you're willing to come in. So I was like, all right, fine, I'll do it. So we put it on the calendar and it came that fateful day. I drove from work to Dr. Pannebecker's office. Gail was already there. And I walked in and I was a little bit nervous. I didn't know what he was going to cover, but I thought, you know, anything to help my wife and get this resolved so our marriage can be better, that would be great. So he exchanges some initial, you know, pleasantries and asked me how it's going and told me a little, asked me to tell him a little bit about my background, which I did. And then he looked at me after a long pause and he said, Mike, he said, why do you think you're so driven? Well, it was like he spoke the unspeakable. He asked the question that shouldn't have been asked, but he did ask it and it cut right to the core of my being. And in an instant, I realized that this issue in our marriage was not primarily Gail's issue. It was primarily my issue. I'm not saying she didn't have issues that she had to work through, but she was a trooper in that she was willing to address her side of it. But I had been, at least up until that point, completely unwilling to address my side of it and to acknowledge that, in fact, my work and the amount of time I was spending at work was totally out of balance, if we want to revert to that metaphor, and that I was not giving attention to the other things, that I was at least giving lip service to the fact that they were important priorities for me. So that began a period where we were seeing Dr. Pannebecker together, and it was enormously helpful. But it really took that kind of intervention on Gail's part and on the part of Dr. Pannebecker to get me to face for the first time, not the last time, unfortunately, but for the first time, that my priority management needed to be addressed. And here's the issue. When you're working more than 55 hours a week, you're putting at risk at least five assets. Asset number one, your health. You know, I think early in my career, I thought I could get by eating junk food and not exercising. One of the things I learned, though, in the process was that this inevitably catches up with you, and it caught up with me. And I could tell you about a lot of things that happened. One thing was that I had my gallbladder explode. And, you know, I don't know if that was directly related to my lack of exercise and the kind of food I was eating, but I suspect that didn't help. Well, how many people do you know who have died young simply because they refused to take care of themselves? Now, I know there are congenital diseases, there are issues that cause people to die early. But honestly, so much of the problems that you and I face in our health are self-imposed. You know, we do it to ourselves because we don't take care of this instrument that God has given us. So asset number one that you put at risk when you're working these kind of hours is your health. Number two, asset number two is your family. I'm going to tell you something. You cannot afford a divorce. I can't either. The cost is incalculable. I watched one of my really good friends go through a divorce last year, and I don't think to this day he has really any idea the cost, the impact, the collateral damage that's been imposed on other people's lives, not to mention his own life. But just ask people that you know who have gone through a divorce. You can't also afford to ignore your children. If you don't invest in them now, you'll be forced to spend time with them later, whether it's in rehab and juvie or worse. So the second asset you put at risk by not managing your priorities, the second asset is your family. Third asset, your friends. You know, sadly, I didn't really have any close personal friends until about 5 years ago. I mean, I hate to admit that. I had colleagues at work. I had acquaintances, people that I had a professional relationship with. And I really mistook that for friendship. And, you know, it's great as far as it goes, but that's different than having great friends who really don't have any other agenda other than to love you and to be in a relationship with you. And thankfully, I've got those kind of relationships now, but I didn't have them at that point. And that was an asset that I was putting at risk. Fourth asset, your effectiveness. Yeah, your effectiveness. I think sometimes, and this, I was certainly guilty of this, I thought I could just muscle through my activities and just by force, you know, outperform my peers and ascend the corporate ladder. But what I've discovered is that I'm the most productive when I'm the most relaxed. It's in essence like golf or any sport. The harder you work, the tighter your grip, the more you bear down, the less effective you'll be. You're the most productive when you're not stressed. So the number of hours you work has almost zero correlation with your effectiveness. I don't know why that is, but I suspect it has to do with this idea of being relaxed. I just had my mentoring group read the book, The Power of Full Engagement by Jim Lohr and Tony Schwartz. And I've got a link in the show notes, but I would highly recommend this book because he talks about this very thing. These two guys worked with professional athletes. They noticed that when athletes began to get stressed, when they began to get tense, that their performance would wane. And so then they started applying this to corporate athletes or people that were working in a professional capacity and saw that the exact same phenomenon occurred. So asset number four is your effectiveness. Asset number five that you put at risk is your influence. You know, your people, the people that report to you, the people that you work with, unconsciously begin to mimic you. Have you ever noticed this when you go into an organization and they don't even see it themselves anymore, but they kind of all dress alike and maybe they use some of the same verbal expressions, maybe some of the same laughs. It's kind of an unconscious thing of mimicking one another and especially the leader. I mean, I could name names here, but I'm sure it's true even in my own organization, but people can't help it. And as a leader, you can't help it either. You're going to set the pace. If you work 70 hours a week, your people think they've got to work 70 hours a week to satisfy you. You set the standard and they believe unconsciously that that's a standard they must keep. The problem is most of them are not going to be able to keep up and you're going to be responsible for the consequences. If your marriage can handle it, great. But what if theirs can't and they go through a divorce or one of their kids goes off the rails or their health is a bust? Are you willing to accept responsibility for that? Because as a leader, you didn't exert the kind of influence that had a positive impact on people. I'm not, at least not anymore. So those are the five assets that you put at risk when you don't get this priority management thing in hand. So your health, your family, your friends, your effectiveness, and your influence. Now, don't get me wrong. I still work hard. And sometimes I still screw up and I get overcommitted. In fact, I'm in a bit of that season right now in my life where I've got to go back and perform calendar triage and get my priorities more in line with my daily practice. But my fundamental premise for this episode of the podcast is this: you and I can achieve or restore work-life balance by following these five suggestions. So I just want to give you five suggestions and then we'll get to some of the questions that I got this last week. Step number one: get crystal clear on your priorities. As I said, I don't think this is so much about work-life balance as it is about priority management. But get crystal clear on your priorities. I mean, write them down. I take people through this process in my free ebook, Creating Your Personal Life Plan. It's one of the exercises, getting clear on your priorities, determining for yourself what matters most. And for me, and this is just me, I'm not saying this prescriptively, but for me, my number one priority is God. That doesn't mean I spend the most time with him or I spend more time with him than I do at work. I don't. But that's my number one priority. And there's got to be time in my schedule for giving attention to that relationship. Second priority, and this is a surprise to a lot of people, but I put myself second. It's a little bit like when you go on a flight and the flight attendant goes through that little spiel at the front end of the flight where they say, you know, in the event that the cabin loses pressure, mass with or oxygen mass will pop out above you, you know, grab them. And what do they say? Put it on first before attempting to help someone else. Why? Because if you pass out, you're not going to be of help to anybody else. Well, the same is true with your priorities. If your health suffers, you're not going to be of help to anyone else. If you've got psychological baggage that's unresolved, you're not going to really be in a position where you can help someone else. If you're going through marital conflict or marital distress, you're not going to be of much use on the job. You're going to be distracted. You're not going to be focused. You're not going to be giving it your best effort. So I put myself really second. I want to give attention to that. And I personally do that first thing in the morning. You know, that's when I, for me, read the Bible. That's when I pray. That's where I do my reading. That's where I do my running and other exercise. But I make sure I'm taking care of me so that I can be a resource to others. Listen, if you're interested in exploring this whole idea of your personal life plan, then go to michaelhyatt.com/life plan. And you have to sign up for my email newsletter to get this free ebook. But thousands literally have found it helpful. Over 50,000 people have downloaded it. And I think it'll be helpful to you, especially that section on priorities. So step one, get crystal clear on your priorities. Step two, schedule time for the things that matter most. I don't know about you, but unless it's on my schedule, it's not likely to get done. The most important things have to appear on my calendar. Otherwise, they're not going to get done. So that's step number two. Step number three is establish a brief set of non-negotiables. So let me just give you an example. I say brief, like 7 to 10, 5 is better. Even 3 would be great, but get a written set of non-negotiables. For example, and I said this earlier, but focusing on personal development between 5 a.m. and 8 a.m. That's really my objective. That's one of my non-negotiables. Leave the office promptly at 6 p.m. That's another one of my non-negotiables. Focus on the family between 6:30 p.m. and 8 p.m. Now, I'll tell you, in this season of my life, where we don't have any children living at home, it's a little easier for us to be flexible with that. But still, I like to really focus on Gail in the evening, and then I can go back to email or other projects after 8 p.m. But to really have that time to eat a meal together, to sit down and talk, to talk about the things that happened that day, and to just process life together. Another non-negotiable for me is to take Gail on a date every week. And another non-negotiable, attend church every week. So those are just some of my non-negotiables. Your list will look different. Step number four, strive for alignment between your priorities and your daily practice. Again, I think priority management or priority alignment is a better metaphor than work-life balance. And, you know, that leads me to step five, accept the fact that there will always be tension. This is not a problem to solve. It's a tension to manage. And I don't think there's going to ever be this magical moment, and I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I don't think there'll ever be a magical moment where you just suddenly achieve work-life balance, or you've managed your priorities, you've got them written down, and now everything is playing out exactly as you envisioned it. No, there's always a tension. There's always this tension or temptation to get things out of whack, to not live your life plan. And I think you just have to accept that and be willing to keep working at it. So to conclude this segment, let me leave you with this question. How are you doing at the practice of priority management? How are you doing at the practice of priority management? And if you go to my blog, to the show notes for this episode, and there's a link in the show notes, you can find a place for you to answer that in the comments section of my blog. And some of the most robust content, some of the best content is the comment section of my blog. So I hope you go there and leave a response to this. Well, let's get to some of the listener questions that I had. As I said, I had more than 20 responses by voicemail, and I wish I could put every one of them on the air. And it's, you know, it's going to be tough enough to get these five in. But let me just give you a little sampling of the questions because they were great. First of all, Ben Holbrook, who's calling from England. Take it away, Ben.
Hello, Michael. My name is Ben Holbrook. I'm phoning from Eastbourne on the south coast of England. My question to you on work-life balance is, for myself, being a dad of three young kids, you know, how did you manage to get a good work-life balance with all the pressures and demands that having a young family and working throws at you? And also, how do you just not end up resenting life and all those pressures which can be added to that? Looking forward to hearing your podcast this week. Thanks.
Ben, great question. And first of all, I didn't always get it right. And especially when my kids were young, I did not give my family the attention that I should have. And thankfully, I had a wife who kind of kept me tethered to the family and kept reeling me back in and gently reminding me of what really matters most. And so that was extremely helpful. So I feel like I kind of zigged and zagged, and sometimes I got it right and sometimes I got it wrong. And there were seasons where I did better than others. And I just think you have to accept that fact. I mean, you can constantly improve, but don't be too hard on yourself. Just course correct and get back on track, because shame is not going to help you. What you need here is just to make a course alignment and get back on track. In terms of resenting it, I think for me, the antidote to any of those negative emotions, whether it's anger or resentment, and I feel that from time to time, I got to be honest, with my workload. Sometimes I'm traveling to a speaking engagement. I just go, man, why do I have to go out again? I'd love to be at home. But the thing that always reverses that for me is gratitude. You cannot simultaneously be grateful and be angry or be resentful. And this time that you're in with three small children is a precious time. I mean, you'll look back on this at some point and think, those were the good old days. So don't miss the joy of that. Yeah, I know it's tough. It's hard providing a living. There's a lot of demands, but be thankful for that and try to find something to be thankful. And I've forced myself to learn to think that way, that when I feel those negative emotions, to again, get refocused on what I'm grateful for. So great question. Next question comes from Bob Anderson.
Michael, as you've asked the question about the work-life balance, I'm assuming that what you're really asking is kind of the ratio between hours per week that one works versus leisure time and spending time with a family. Not sure about that, but I think that's what you were asking in your tweet. You only had 140 characters. So, but that question kind of provokes a greater issue for me. It's a bigger picture, one that I don't really hear people address very well. In fact, I haven't heard many people address it much at all over the decades of walking with the Lord. And I even worked with Jack Hayford for a number of years, and nobody really laid into the idea of what part of this whole journey and the adventure is up to God and what part is up to us. Because I'm thinking of, like, in Genesis 1:28, when we were... when God created us, he was talking about we need to go out and subdue the land and replenish it. And that, of course, involves the idea of conquering and accomplishing with overflow. And yet we're also supposed to be still and know that he is God. So there's a tension in the mix, and I'd love to hear you address that. Thanks. This is Bob Anderson, 77, one of your followers, and I'm here in Nashville.
Okay, Bob, thanks. That's also a great question. And there's so much that we could unpack from that question. But let me just mention a couple of things. First of all, I do think that we were made by our Creator to work and to rest. Both of those things have to be two components of our lives. In fact, it's built into the very structure of creation. And right there early in the Genesis account, with man working for 6 days, or even God himself working for 6 days and then resting on the seventh. So there's got to be this balance between surging and resting. And notice that it's not an equal balance, working 6 days and resting one in seven. But what this takes is enormous trust. It's not, in the end, ultimately up to us. We have to trust. Yes, we have to put in our work. And I think there's this kind of divine human synergy that takes place, you know, that God works as we work. And I don't want to wax too theological on that, but I'm just saying that it takes both. You know, we can't act as if, you know, sort of a practical atheist, like God doesn't exist and it's all up to us. But on the other hand, we can't fall into this sort of notion that, you know, we're just going to sit around and let God do the whole thing. I think it's both. God expects us to work. He gave man work to do even before the fall, but there's no end to work. And it takes an act of faith, an act of courage to set down your tools, take a deep breath and say, I'm going to rest. Yes, I could work more, but I'm not going to. I'm going to rest. I'm going to put it down. So again, I think there has to be both the work and the rest. And that book that I mentioned earlier, The Power of Full Engagement gets into that at some length, and it's very, very well written. So thanks, Bob. The next question comes from Deirdre Baker.
Hi, Mike. My name is Deirdre Baker, and I'm with Superior Business Management Solutions in New York. My question, which I hear a lot from clients, is how to balance your work life with your home life when your home office is located right there in the home. It seems very easy to get kind of sucked in to work at any given moment of the day. So if you have any tips on that, that would be great, and I'd love to share it with my visitors. Thanks. Bye.
Well, I'm learning this in spades right now because for the first time, actually the second time, in my work life, I've got my office back in my home. Since I stepped out of my role at Thomas Nelson as the CEO, I'm now working out of my home, which I love doing that. It was difficult initially. I think it was difficult for Gail because suddenly she had me around full time. And, you know, that created some constraints for her that she wasn't used to, because I do need some periods of time to do things like this, like the podcast, where I need extended quiet periods to think, to write, to do the podcast, whatever. So that's been a big adjustment for her, but it's also been a big adjustment for me for the very reason you say, and that is that it's hard to create a hard boundary between work and family life when your office is right there in your home. I'm essentially doing the same thing that I did when I worked at Thomas Nelson, and that is I'm leaving my home office at 6 p.m. It's very rare. I mean, extremely rare for me to work in here in the evenings. I try to go out usually before 6 o'clock, have dinner with Gail, and spend that time until 8 o'clock. So I just think you have to have an agreement and a stated, it's really powerful if you'll do this, but have a stated boundary, like you're going to leave the office. One of the guys in my mentoring group, Corey, has a similar situation, but he tries to leave his home office at 5:30 so that he can be with his wife, Sally, and their young baby boy, Drew. So again, I think it's just stating the intention and then doing your best to live up to it. The next question is from Jeff Keaty.
Hey, Mike, I love your show. You asked for questions about balancing work and home life. For me, it's ministry and family. Would you talk about this in light of current technology? Like with my iPhone, my office, practically my whole ministry goes wherever I go. How can we draw clear lines that honor both our occupations and our home, family, and personal life? Thanks.
Well, that's one I struggle with too, and I've seen some people completely blow it on this. I mean, it's the kind of person who is having dinner with his wife, and you see these people in the restaurants, and they're constantly checking their smartphone. They just can't give it up. You know, they can't unbuckle from work, and so they take it with them. And believe me, the family members notice, and they resent it. And I've seen this in the lives of some of my friends. So I think you've got to be really smart about having those intentional times when you just put the phone away, when you either turn it off or certainly turn the ringer off, and you make it about the person you're with. This drives me crazy, and I've been guilty of it too, but it drives me crazy when you're with someone who's constantly looking at their phone, whether it's the last tweet or the text message or the phone ringing, that for some reason, the person who's not present takes priority over the person who is. What's that about? I mean, it's crazy when you think about it. But again, I think you've got to have an intentional boundary and some kind of rules for yourself, or as Lauren Schwartz talked about in the Power of Full Engagement, some rituals. And it may be that you're turning off your phone or putting it on mute after 6 p.m. at night would be an example of that kind of thing. So great question, Jeff. And I can tell you, in the next episode of This Is Your Life, we're going to be talking more about technology and, practically speaking, how to shave 10 hours off your work week. So I'll talk more about that in a minute. The final question comes from Stephanie Shackelford.
Hi, Michael. This is Stephanie from Atlanta, Georgia. I love reading your blog and now listening to your podcast on the way to work, which brings me to my question about work-life balance. I'm 23 and recently married, and I have my first job right out of graduate school. And balance has always been an important value in my life, but I'm beginning to wonder if balance is even possible. It seems to me that in order to be good at anything, I need to give 100% and not try to balance work and life. So I'm just wondering, how can I give my best to several areas in my life without getting burnt out?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that feel that same pressure. In the competitive world we live in, you think, man, to really get ahead at work, I've got to give it 100%. But you know what? Everybody wants 100%. You know, your church will suck up 100% of your time if you let it. Your recreation, golf, can suck up 100% of your time if you let it, or work. And it's really easy to get all these things out of balance because we want to be competitive. And there are some people, frankly, who are willing to sacrifice everything else in their lives to win at one thin slice of their life. Frankly, I'm not willing to do that. And I'm looking at the long term, not the short term. And I think this comes back to trust. Another book I'd recommend to you, though, although I would have to say we read this in my mentoring group, and not all the guys were as excited about this book as I was, as it turned out, but it's been a very helpful book to me. And it's a book by Andy Stanley called the new title is When Work and Family Collide. And the old title was Choosing to Cheat. But at any rate, you can find that book, and I'll have a link to it in the show notes to the correct title. But it's a great book, and he basically says that ultimately you're going to have to make some choices. That's what this is really about, and I kind of think it goes back to the earlier theme about priority management. You're going to have to make some choices about your priorities. You can't be great at everything. And how about just being great at priority management? You know, I just want to have a balanced life. I am so thankful that I've been married for almost 34 years, that I have 5 adult children who are all reasonably well-adjusted, who are productive, healthy people. Well, that doesn't just happen by sacrificing in other areas of my life. I've had to make some decisions along the way and just sort of let the chips fall where they may. But it's been a great exercise for me. And I think you're going to have to kind of find your own way in that, Stephanie. But I would just urge you, don't fall into the same myth and play by the same rules that everybody in your workplace is. Put your time in, work hard, work smart, but don't sacrifice everything for the sake of your work. That is not only a myth, it's a lie. Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. Next week, as I said, I'm planning to talk about how to shave 10 hours off your work week. This was not only a blog post that I wrote, but it's a speech that I give around the country, especially to corporations, because everybody's trying to find more room in their week to get more productive work done. So if you've got a question about how to be more productive at work, especially about the technology, please leave me a voicemail. And you can do that at michaelhyatt.com/voicemail, or you can call my feedback hotline at 615-656-5001. Again, that's 615-656-5001. You can also leave me a voicemail with your feedback about the show. I'm still working on it. I still want to improve it. I really want to make it work for you. And if you prefer, you can send me an email at feedback@michaelhyatt.com. And it would also be enormously helpful to me if you would rate me on iTunes. And there's a link in the show notes. But if you'd actually do one of those reviews, that would be helpful in getting my podcast on the new and noteworthy section of iTunes, so that it can be introduced to new people who haven't heard of it yet. So thanks again for listening. I hope this has been helpful. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. Life, are you?